Welcome to Live the Fuel.
Welcome to Live
Welcome
the Fuel.
To Live the Fuel. Focusing on health, business, and lifestyle. And now your host, Scott Mulvaney.
All right, good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another Live the Fuel show here in 2017. So today, we're bringing on a new co-host. This is a gentleman that we basically connected online through networking, something that I've gotten very good at. And I'm actually excited to talk to this gentleman today for your benefit as our audience, because he's got a heck of a backstory. There's a big brand out there that he's a part of called Fitfluential. But more importantly, we're hoping to get some more of the backstory today behind this gentleman who has come out of Silicon Valley for many, many years, worked with 9 different startups. I guarantee you we're going to talk about the craziness of lifestyle transition, why health and wellness is so important, how this gentleman is basically or has basically fought through cancer along the way. So without further ado, this is a powerful co-host for you guys today. Please welcome Kevin Cottrell to the show.
Well, I'm happy to be here, and I will be looking forward to talking about the backstory, because it is quite a difference from when I was the startup guy out of Silicon Valley and where I am today.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, we can jump right in there. I mean, how long ago did you leave Silicon Valley per se, as far as that the whole corporate startup world?
So my backstory, and I'll just give a quick tie-in for that, because so many people know Silicon Valley and all the startups, was when I got out of college in the 80s. Yeah, I'm kind of an old guy, right? I went back to Palo Alto. I grew up right there in the Los Altos, Palo Alto area, and it's what you did, right? You got involved in Silicon Valley. You know, I went to school in the Midwest, but came back. And so I got involved in a number of startups in the 90s, and I was the typical biz dev executive working 80, 90, 100 hours, traveling incessantly, not getting enough sleep. But I worked out every day, right? So I thought I was on track, right? I would get up at 4:30 in the morning and work out a lot. So I thought I had all of this figured out. So in the 90s, I think I did 8 startups. The last one went into 2001, and everybody knows what happened in 2001, right? That was the dot-com bust.
Oh, yeah. I was in it.
So I was a restricted officer, and I had a ton of options. Couldn't sell any of them. The stock went public, was $100 a share, went back down to $1 a share in 60 days. So now I added in a layer of stress. So for really the 80s and all of the 90s, I was that guy that thought that sleep was overrated. I could do pretty much anything so long as I was doing healthy things like working out, and didn't really worry about it. And so if you flash forward to about the summer of 2006, I was living in Miami. A company had brought me down there to turn around one of their offices. And at the time, I was getting ready to relocate into St. Louis to do something else. And I just happened to have a mole taken off my neck. Didn't think any of it. I'd had it done 2 or 3 times before.
I've done it as well.
And I get a call, right? You know, I'm in literally in transit between Miami and St. Louis, and the doc's office said, we need you in for an emergency procedure on Monday. And I said, well, that's going to be a challenge. What's the emergency? And they said, you have melanoma, and it looks to be pretty serious. And if we don't get this skin out of your neck, you're going to run the risk that you're going to end up with it system-wide, and that's not going to end well for you. So not a great call, right?
Wow. That's not a great call. That's wow. Well, I mean, what kind of – how do you react to a phone call like that?
Well, you know, one of the things I would like to think that I got really good at as an executive is when lots of drama and chaos comes up, leadership and executives fall into 2 camps. You're either a problem solver or you're part of the problem and chaos. So I had developed a pretty good reputation as being a problem solver. So what I started asking questions of the doctor's office, I said, okay, so what's the deal? I know you want me in on Monday. I can't be there Monday. I'm going to St. Louis. There has to be somebody in St. Louis I can see. I'm happy to go in. I get that this is serious, and I need to know what it is I'm supposed to have. And so they dropped back and said, I'll tell you what, we'll make some calls. We will find you somebody in St. Louis. So by the time I even arrived in St. Louis, they had identified a surgeon in St. Louis for me that actually was one of the preeminent people in the entire country for the procedure I needed. So you talk about a fortuitous change. There wasn't even a surgeon like that in Miami.
Oh my gosh. So you definitely work with the right people. They had the right connections.
Yeah. Well, and you think about how things line up, right? Instead of going into full panic mode, and I can tell you it was a very, very stressful period of time. I'm certainly not going to downplay that. But what ended up happening is I was in fairly quickly, within a week, prep for surgery at SLU, St. Louis University, with one of the guys that was sort of the preeminent people that do the procedure, which is called a wide excision, where they take a huge, gigantic flap out of your neck, make sure that all of the edges are negative, and they eliminate all of the melanoma from all tissue. And they keep taking more and more out. So what was interesting about it is I ended up in the right spot, right? I got the guy that is one of the few in the country that really, really, he trains everybody else to do this. So it turned out to be fortuitous. And it also made me realize that I need to start thinking about the fact that I'm not invincible and I got to start dealing with health issues.
I would say so. I mean, plus, I mean, that is not an easy procedure. I mean, luckily I have zero cancer in my family yet. And but just hearing about that procedure, we've seen a lot of these people, and I've known people with, I will say they've done a really good job recovering from scarring, but that is not a small procedure, because depending on how big of a flap per se they take out, I mean, that's a large chunk.
So what was interesting is, I mean, literally I looked like Frankenstein on my left neck. I first got out. I couldn't turn my head left or right from the standpoint of any movement for about a week. So imagine waking up from surgery and they didn't let you know how much skin they're going to have to take out. And also, good, bad, or indifferent, they didn't let me know I wasn't going to be able to move my neck. So imagine you go in for surgery, and then you wake up and you can't move your neck, right? What was the first thought I had? It was not
paralysis,
a good one.
Paralysis? I mean, do you have a nerve?
It was not a good one. So, and really, when I started this, I was under the impression, and I want to touch on something that you had just mentioned, where, you know, there was plenty of cancer, you know, or heart disease and things like that in my family. I was, at that point, which I'm not today, of the belief that, you know, cancer was much more aligned with family history. And what I came to find out in the period since then is it was much more of my lifestyle that put me at risk than it was any family history.
Yes, I'm glad you're talking about that, because, and we can, why don't we dig into that? Because I'm your fellow health, wellness, fitness junkie, and I truly, truly have proven and believe in this whole thing of genetics controlling our lives. And I basically am against that because, just like you just helped confirm, is that just because doctors say or people say that something can run in your family, well, it's technically, no one in my family looks like me. I am tall, lean, and athletic due to my lifestyle and my chosen commitment to that healthy lifestyle. And everybody else in my family is overweight and has, I mean, my dad's a type 2 diabetic as of 8 years ago. He wasn't always. So there you go. There was not a genetic predisposition. It was his lifestyle that led him down that path. So what do you say to that? I mean, how do you try to help other people understand and explain that, especially since you can actually connect to this from the a cancerous level?
You know, so what I discovered after the fact, and it was a journey, right? It wasn't at first. At first, I was doing the monthly visits to the dermatologist and the surgeon, and they checked me all over my body and proceeded to try and scare the heck out of me with wear sunscreen, stay out of the sun, cover your entire body. And, you know, I didn't think any of it other than, thank God I survived this and I should just follow their advice. So with that as a foundation, at first I didn't get it. Right. I was just thinking, wow, I dodged a bullet and I guess I better follow their advice.
Sure.
And what I started to discover was, living in St. Louis, is I was trending towards what I called the period in 2009 or so, where it became what people affectionately like to call me, Fat Kevin. Right. You know, I wasn't morbidly obese, but I looked obese. I was heavier. I was starting to trend towards type 2 diabetes, and sort of following this conventional advice, I was back to working out 4:30 in the morning, 5 days a week. I wasn't getting enough sleep, and I was starting to head a different direction from a lifestyle standpoint. So I knew something wasn't right still, right? I was more in tune with health, but I was starting to question, you know, this, it's not making sense to me, because I'm sort of doing what everybody else is doing, and I feel good. I was running another successful business, but looking at myself, every day, I was like, you know what? I'm trending a different direction that I want to go. And it was Bob Wolf's podcast that I discovered the paleo diet. And I said, you know what? I need to start looking at this because it wasn't just about the diet. It was about the whole lifestyle concept, right?
Exactly.
It was about getting back into sort of more of a, you know, ancestral health framework, being healthy overall. And what it caused me to look at is maybe I'm causing much more of this than I thought. And so where I've moved on from that, and I want to kind of answer the question through a couple of different phases, is I discovered that, you know, what we learned, Scott, when you and I were in biology class and we learned about Watson and Crick and the double helix and DNA, and what we know now about epigenetics, and which is the portion of our bodies through mitochondria and other things that are much more lifestyle. In other words, you think of them like little switches. And it's basically, if you look at what's passed from our mother's lineage and then from her mother, it's all on that side, right? In other words, 100% of the DNA and the mitochondria is passed from our mother's side. And so we start to look at things and go, well, maybe this all operates differently than I thought it did. Mm-hmm. And so if you start looking, and somebody, I have a good friend, Dr. Jack Cruz, who's a neurosurgeon, and he challenged me in about 2012 to say, go look at this and start looking at the incidence of a melanoma, for example, and look at the fact that the further you are from the equator, the higher the incidence. So, you know, them telling you that it's sunlight and it's what you're doing there versus some other lifestyle choices and possibly not getting enough, you know, melatonin production and other things from getting in the sun. It might be a little bit of the opposite. And he challenged me to get out of my comfort zone, my framework. And so what ended up happening is I started to basically just kind of wipe the slate clean and go, I need to take another complete new look at this, right? I know it's not just following the paleo diet. Mm-hmm. Maybe all this is lifestyle. And so I started to focus on sleep. I started to focus on getting a healthy dose of sunlight, getting back on track with what we needed. And what happened pretty quickly was I got really, really healthy. I mean, if you look back in 2012, there's a blood marker for inflammation. It's the highly sensitive CRP. Mm-hmm. Mine was north of 6, right?
Wow.
And that means I was looking good on the outside, right? We did Paleo FX, the conference, the very first year. I was one of the organizers of that. I look great, right? You look like you have a six pack. You look healthy. Everybody's like, wow, this guy's in great shape. And Dr. Cruz challenged me to look at my level of inflammation and just make sure, especially because of my history with the cancer, that I wasn't inflamed inside, because that was going to put me at risk. And so what I found was I still wasn't sleeping enough. I wasn't getting enough sunlight. I wasn't doing some of the things I needed to do to lower my stress levels. And what I did is I undertook a pretty aggressive program from a lifestyle change standpoint to get the inflammation down. And the net on it is within about 60 days, I went from north of 6 on my marker of inflammation to less than 1. In other words, extremely healthy. And it's indicative of how much your environment and your inputs, right? Because I didn't take 8 million supplements. I didn't do a lot of things, you know, that I changed my diet. I was still following a basic paleo template. It was all the lifestyle stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and real quick for our listeners, by the way, he's dropped a couple of things. These will all be in the show notes on livethefuel.com for his episode. But make sure you check out fitfluential.com. And obviously, he just name dropped something really cool, which is called PaleoFX.com as well. Check that out. But I love what you're talking about right here, which is the power of inflammation and reducing inflammation. And like you just talked about a marker and everything else. I mean, some of our audience might not be experienced with that level of blood tests and background. And that's something that I've gotten into more with my research into biohacking and that whole new generational shift and titling. I'm sure you've been following that as well. but how did you get into that? Was that something recommended by a doctor? Was that something that you stumbled across saying, you know, I'm going to take that level of testing and get that done and track that? I mean,
no, and that's a great question. I mean, initially, I had limited, like many people, understanding of anything other than you got blood work, right? And mm-hmm. one of the blood works I got was from a doc that said, look, you're a borderline diabetic, and we may have to start treating you if you don't make some changes, which also drove me to take a look at regular blood testing because, again, this is that lifestyle stuff, right? I really needed to focus on it. So I was challenged by a number of people, and this were some of the participants in the very first year of PaleoFX, to look at a harder look at key biomarkers, right? In other words, if you're showing inflammation, you can look at a number of things. You can look at some of the ratios in your blood. One of them is that inflammation marker I mentioned, the highly sensitive CRP.
Right.
You also can look at things like the bun creatine ratio. I've come to learn that that one is one of the ones that baffles a lot of people because they don't pay attention to it. But what it shows, for example, is coincident with people that say, God, I'm taking all this vitamin D. I know I'm worried about my vitamin D level. I'm supplementing. And or they live in an environment, let's say they live south, right? They're south of a line between Atlanta and Los Angeles where they can get sun all year long, right? It's not like where you are.
Oh, yeah, like here in the East Coast, we talk about, you're south of the Mason-Dixon line, for example.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm saying this because there's people out there that have undoubtedly done this, right? You go to the doc and they're like, your vitamin D level's low. So what I discovered was if you have a lifestyle and you're not getting enough sleep, and especially if you're in an environment where you've got way too much blue light, you're indoors way too much, you can take a bunch of vitamin D. You can even get sun outside. And remarkably, our bodies don't react. In other words, we still can't create higher levels of vitamin D, which is, as you know, incredibly important from a health and wellness standpoint. So
everybody is deficient. I'm blanking on the gentleman who does the studies in the there's a high country section of Arizona where his facility is at. But he talks about even him. He's somebody who lives in the outdoors, is very active, ultra marathoner, and he was deficient in vitamin D, and he's in Arizona.
I keep going around a cycle of understanding that for many people, you can't out-supplement and you can't supplement at all your way to health and wellness. There are specific instances where things are necessary and helpful, but it's certainly not the panacea that I thought it was initially. In other words, I used to take all sorts of supplements and I take a lot fewer now. I focus a lot more on core lifestyle changes, you know, getting out, getting sunlight, right? There's a short period of time in, you know, central Texas where I can't get enough sunlight. But other than that, I'm very focused on it. Mm-hmm. And so what I noticed was in my blood markers, the problematic vitamin D started to come up. And again, it wasn't coming up because I was supplementing. It came up because what I was doing was anchoring my circadian rhythms. And I was doing things that for many people were counterintuitive, right? I would be outside at as close to sunrise to sort of, depending on the time of the year, 8 a.m. and getting sun in my eyes without sunglasses or contacts. I don't wear contacts, but the anchoring of my circadian cycle and then making sure I got enough sun throughout the day and regularly, my vitamin D started to come up. Whereas before, even if I was supplementing, I couldn't get it to go to the level it is now. And so that neurosurgeon who challenged me sent me down a path where I realized we're much more in charge of our health and wellness than we should be reliant on the medical profession, whether it's functional medical. In other words, they're only seeing you for a few minutes. And this is why the whole diet piece is problematic. Doesn't matter if you like a keto diet, a paleo diet, doesn't matter what kind of diet you like. That's only a small input. And what I discovered is so much of the lifestyle choices have a much, much bigger impact. And I think that's where people are overly reliant on the system, whether it's the progressive new system like naturopaths and functional medical docs, which do a great job, right? They do the blood work and the assessment. But there's a frustration in functional medicine where they're getting variable results, right? We've certainly had on Fifluential Radio a number of docs that we've interviewed. And when you talk to them, whether they do it in the interview or not, they certainly will admit it if you ask the question offline, that there's a tremendous amount of frustration because they can test and they then try and treat, sometimes with supplements. And then there's a lot of patients that don't react positively. In other words, one patient will, and then the next eight don't. And they can't figure out what it is, and they're still not where they need to be on a lifestyle standpoint. They're getting there, but things like vitamin D, the way I just went through, are a perfect example of people not understanding that this circadian cycle that starts with sunlight and getting proper sleep. In other words, the light-dark cycle is so much more critical for everything that we do with health and wellness.
Oh, I tell people all the time, I mean, it's I mean, yeah, I work with a supplement company. There is a minor amount of supplementation that I do just because there is a nutrient deficiency in our food. I'm sorry. I grew up in farming when I was a kid, so I know that we do things a lot different today than we did back then. But that's a whole different discussion. But to your point on sleep, I saw these are the things we have control over. And maybe we could talk a little bit about the sleep piece, because people don't realize it's not just, oh, are you getting the 6 to 8 hours per day? But it's also back to your circadian rhythm. It's the cycle that you're on. If you're, you know, Friday and Saturday night out until 2 o'clock in the morning, but then the next 3 days you actually are going to bed by 11 p.m., like your cycle is all thrown off and your body knows it.
Yeah, it really is. And what I didn't subscribe to initially is what you just discussed, which is once I went from the go to sleep at like 10 or 11, get up at 4:30, which was extremely problematic and probably one of the largest contributors to my risk of getting the melanoma I had, is I then learned and went through a path of, okay, I need to get at least 6, probably preferably 8 hours of sleep. And there is a common misperception, and you touched on it, which is the messaging in the media is, I just need to sleep 8 hours. And if you, for example, I interviewed a naval special warfare doctor, Dr. Kirk Parsley, and he described the fact that, especially for people like in Navy SEALs and what have you, they discovered that one of the fastest ways to wreck yourself is to not get enough sleep, but also to hormonally whack yourself because you're getting sleep at the wrong time. In other words, you're trying with shift work, for example, sleep during the day. If you've adjusted it, even if you get 6 or 8 hours, and just kind of definitively, you should adjust what you're doing based on the light cycle. And there's a problem with what people do where they think that they can just blow through it. I certainly was one of these people, right? You know, there's, oh, I only got 6 hours sleep. I only got 4 hours sleep. And so
we've all done it, man. We did it in college. We did it in our big jobs. It's like, you know, when you're the guy or girl, I should say, you know, woman, who can muscle through, so to speak. We all thought that that's how we were becoming the superhero or the top performer, because we're breaking the rules and showing that we could still pull off amazing performance by not doing what everybody else says we're supposed to be doing. And it's just a giant mess. It's going to build up and accumulate, and you're going to come crashing down.
It really does. And part of what I've discovered is, if you look at melatonin and melatonin being low, because people think of melatonin as only sleep related, right? In other words, if you listen back to what I said about getting sunlight in your eyes and getting up and being aligned with the light dark cycle, the whole melatonin production, and we've had several guests on Fitfluential Radio that have talked about this because it is so critical. It's not, oh, I'm going to do this because I got 8 hours sleep. It starts with everything else you do from a lifestyle standpoint. And if you look at the coincidence of, for example, low melatonin and chronic diseases, some of the stuff that we've been talking about, cancer, heart disease, all of the other things that are sort of awful ways to go from a health and wellness standpoint, they're all coincident with low melatonin. So if, for listeners, you are thinking that, I'm not going to worry about this, I'm eating a great diet, I'm working out, this is probably one of the things that I would liken to, from a health and wellness standpoint, lifestyle-wise, that you're playing Russian roulette, and it's just a matter of how many times you're playing it. And it really is that dangerous, because if you go to just – and what I challenge people that fight me on this is, go do a Google search and look for melatonin deficiency, and then pick your favorite disease. You could start with cancer, which we've been talking about. You could start with heart disease. You could start with dementia. You're going to see that low melatonin, and this is directly linked to what we're talking about, not only with sleep, but also with lifestyle, is coincident with all of these. So in other words, back to what you said earlier about the whole genetic discussion, this is that epigenetic side. In other words, you can whack your melatonin a number of ways. One of the easiest ways to do it is not sleep enough, but because that's where melatonin production occurs. But the trigger for it and the release of it all starts with all these lifestyle choices. So I was clearly in the camp where I had no clue about this, right? I just was thinking, all right, I got a good night's sleep. I got this many hours. And if it started at 10, 11, 11:30 at night, and I decided not to work out in the morning, and I was getting up 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, like a lot of these high-tech guys do when they're programmers and what have you, or right? They go to sleep at 2 a.m. You're putting yourself at risk from a melatonin standpoint.
Yeah, it's funny because there's a generalized statement out there. I'm sure you've heard it. I've heard it three different ways, but in general, you hear, and I'll use it once in a while just to kind of initially get through to people on health and balance. But it's like, hey, guys, like you can go in the gym and you can lift all the weights you want. But if your nutrition is crap, you're pretty much wasting your time. But to be fair, like some people say, oh, it's an 80-20 rule, right? It's 80% nutrition, 20% fitness. And I think we're missing that boat here when it comes to that sleep. And I think the most important thing that our listeners need to understand here about sleep is your body needs to recover. It needs that downtime. And I don't know, where do you kind of fall in line there? Do you ever throw out that percentages when you're talking to a beginner or an intermediate person who's trying to tackle this and figure out that lifestyle balance?
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up because this is one that I do get contacted a lot because of me being a co-host on Fifth Financial Radio, right? Yep. So people will come to me. They're either on the business side of the world because I have a management consulting practice, and they'll know that I do this. They'll know that I'm that health and wellness guy, right? You know, so let's go ask Kevin questions. And what's interesting is when we start talking, they'll find that I ask him lifestyle questions. Tell me a little bit about sort of a 24-hour day, you know, and I want to find out, and they're surprised typically when I'm asking him about sleep and sleep quality. What's your room like? Is it dark, cold, and quiet? Are you watching TV in the evening? Are you blocking blue light on the screens? You know, what do you do for a living? You know, what's the stress level? And the answer to your question is they're baffled when I haven't asked them about what do you eat. they're baffled when I'm not asking about what kind of workout did you do. And so my biggest aha, and this tends to be controversial, right? You describe it as, this is almost like a religious argument, right?
Yeah.
So the way I describe it is, and I use kind of a real estate analogy of building a building or building a house, right? The people that want to argue keto or paleo, right? The diet side, the nutrition side, do this, eat this way, you know, that you need these nutrients, are talking about what we want to put on the wall, right? Are we going to do brick? Are we going to do stucco? Are we going to build something with wood siding, right? That's the wall of the structure. And then on the other wall, there's the group of, oh, you need to do CrossFit. You need to do this. You need to do this kind of metabolic conditioning, and you're going to burn calories in, calories out type of model, right? Mm-hmm. And what, in my opinion, they're missing is we're putting all this on a wrecked foundation. Just conceptually, it doesn't matter. Imagine we just put it on stone like they used to do back in the 1800s. It wouldn't matter if we put stucco on one wall or we put brick. It wouldn't matter if the other wall is finally built with metabolic wads and CrossFit and all the rest of it, because foundationally, if we're wrecking our body, we're not aligned with the light-dark cycle. Our circadian rhythm is completely whacked. Our hormones are out of whack. We're running a fire inside from an inflammation standpoint. Your structure is going to break. You're not going to get the results that you want. And you will see this if you look at this way. In other words, there are people that get great results. There are also people that, for example, you'll hear the stories, and I'm sure, Scott, you've seen this on Facebook, where somebody didn't look like they were a metabolic mess. Mm-hmm. You know, they're 35, 37 years old, and you know, this is horrific, right? Their friends report on Facebook that, you know, John or Susie went to sleep last night and never woke up.
Yeah. I have seen those crazy posts, and it blows people's minds because, like, I don't understand. He was in the gym 5 days a week.
And yeah. So to answer your question, to tie it down, because somebody's going to want to know the percentage, I'm of the controversial opinion that if your sleep isn't right, if your light, dark cycle is not right, if your circadian alignment and the sort of epigenetic side isn't right, you should be working out, but probably a lot less. In other words, I went from 5 or 6 days a week, and I used to do some pretty serious workouts, to 2 days a week. I also have a strict rule that if I don't get a good night's sleep for whatever reason, I don't work out the next day. In other words, I'm not going to get the benefit of it from a hormonal standpoint, and my body is recovering from a bad night's sleep. So going from 5 or 6 days to 2, one would probably ask the obvious question, well, what's the effect been? Well, I'm actually leaner now and stronger than I was before. And all of my key markers for inflammation and a number of other things have all gone the right direction. So I think to answer your question, there's an overappreciation of both of these factors, the nutrition side and the exercise side. And one thing that is pretty certain if you go look for it is if you're not sleeping right, you're going to have issues. If you're overdoing it and wrecking your circadian rhythm, you're going to have issues. Because one of the best ways to get off track is work out way too much, not sleep enough. And then even if you're eating right, you're not going to have great results. So I could flip it the other way. Even if you're eating right and not working out, because you heard me talk about 2 days a week, and you're still not sleeping right, you're still not going to get results, right? Because this is, gets at some of those cliches out there, which is abs are built in the kitchen, right? Well, okay. And I don't buy that, because I certainly didn't see that. I haven't seen it with a lot of other people, because I was that paleo guy, right? You know, I got with my co-organizers, Keith and Michelle, and came up with the concept for Paleo FX. And I was the paleo guy, right? I was working out 5 days a week. I'm leaner and more muscular now, and it's not because I'm doing paleo cleaner. It's actually, I can probably be less compliant now because I sleep better. I'm more aligned from a circadian standpoint. And what this does, and this is where people have a misperception that I'm going to exercise my way to success, or I'm going to eat my way to success. And pretty much it's way north of 80%. It could be way north of 90%. I end up asking questions. If somebody is struggling and they want to talk about food or exercise, I come back to circadian cycles and sleep and stress. And it's always coincident. It's like literally more than 80 or 90% of the time, I can get to it pretty quickly, five or six questions, and I really know what the issue is. Now, the problem is people want to fight you on that because it's counterintuitive for them. You mean, wait a minute, I could do this and I work out less, I'm going to get better results, or it's not what I'm eating. Now, obviously, if somebody's eating processed food and they're going out and fast food, that's not going to be helpful. But this gets to the argument and the issue about you need to do paleo better. I interviewed Sarah Fragoso, right? She's from the gym that Rob Wolf used to own out in Chico, California, and she made the comment.
I have heard of him.
Yeah, and so she made the comment, and right? She's the paleo cookbook lady, right? She's written more books probably that have had more copies sold. And when I interviewed her, she said, I've learned so much more, and we spend much more time talking about lifestyle instead of doing paleo. And she said, I'm embarrassed to say that I was in the camp of, oh, somebody's not getting results. You just need to do paleo better, right? And so the world is starting to wake up to this. And in her gym, and I want to use this to tie this story down, you can't go, and this is a CrossFit like gym, right? They're going to do metabolic wads and Olympic lifting and all that stuff. If you're in their gym, they will not let you work out 5 or 6 days a week. It's not even allowed. Go find a different gym. And if you're having challenges and they talk to you from a lifestyle standpoint and you need to be throttled back, they put you on restrictions and won't let you work out more than twice, possibly three times a week. So the word is starting to get out from people that are ahead of the curve. Now, that said, I can go to Facebook, and I'm sure you have, or Instagram or anywhere else, and you see all sorts of horrific examples of encouraging people to overtrain or thinking that they can just eat their way to success.
Oh, because in my free time on Fridays, I still coach CrossFit at a local CrossFit gym, and I'm that one coach that you will hardly ever see me at the box. Number one, because I have another box closer to my house, and I'm friends with the owners, and I want to just mix things up and put myself into a separate environment. But more importantly, I've been doing some of this exact same experimentation. And it's funny because my girlfriend thinks, oh, well, you must be on a down cycle because you just haven't been working out as much. I said, no, actually, I've been testing a few things. I mean, most importantly, going back to your point on sleep and rest and everything else, like I know I had a crazy day and I'm beat up. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to go work out the next day. I'm going to move that. I'm going to change that program up a little bit. So I'm not hitting the gym 5-6 days a week. It's just not in my programming right now, and I'm fine with it.
Well, and I think for people listening, my challenge for people always is take about 6 weeks and really think about my house analogy. Focus on your foundation. Mm-hmm. Be clean, eat real food that's nutrient dense. But if you're having challenges, focus on that circadian alignment. In other words, do some of the non-intuitive things. Take a look at your lifestyle choices. Are you poisoning yourself with blue light at night? Are you falling asleep with a TV on in the bedroom? Are you waking up every night between 1 and 2? You know, and are your blood markers such that you have massive inflammation? Focus on all of that stuff and then come back and take a look at starting like I described, from massively lower workouts, because it's like an analogy. I used to be a volunteer firefighter in California. I also did rescue work. So I look at it this way. It's like you show up, the house is on fire with inflammation in your body, and you're thinking, well, I'm just going to throw some gasoline in there, which is you're working out 5 or 6 days a week, and everything will be all fine, right? In that analogy, everybody listening is going, well, that doesn't make any sense at all. That would be insane.
Right.
But that is what people do. And you see this at CrossFit boxes. You coach people. You're really familiar. And I'm certainly not trying to pick on CrossFit.
No, no.
But there is a massive misperception that I need to work out more. I mean, my co-host on Fitfluential Radio, Kelly, I go through this with her almost weekly, where I have a conversation with her on, please work out less. The more is not better, because people are wired this way, right? It's the way the industry, especially for her.
I think this goes back to anything, right? We go back, sure. Where's that classic quote that you and I guarantee we've used in our business history, is quality over quantity sometimes, right?
absolutely. And it's the other thing you could say is less is more, right?
Sure.
You know, and it's one of those things where if you do an audit on your sort of light dark cycle and sleep, and you don't need to go beyond that, right? And you know, some of the signs and symptoms of, like I just described, of waking up between 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning and not sleeping well, waking up not feeling right, showing signs of inflammation, you can stop right there, right? We don't need to talk about more exercise. We need to talk about probably a lot less.
Right.
We don't need to, if you're eating fairly healthy, and a lot of people have gotten the concepts about nutrient-dense food, right? You know, ketogenic diets are very popular now, and you know, they're very, very, and we've interviewed plenty of people, and I do some of that, and I'll describe what I do with that in a minute, just because it simplified some of the things. In other words, I can do that, but if I get off track, and everybody does, the first thing I go back to is sleep. Get back on sleep, get focused. You got to worry about your hormonal cycles, especially melatonin, before you go try and fix things with workouts, right? You know, I had a period of time where I was doing a lot of body weight stuff this fall, and for whatever reason, one day my bicep was, you know, it felt like it didn't tear, but it felt like it was just always painful when I was doing pull-ups. And so I just took the attitude of, I'm just going to completely mix up what I do. I'm not going to force the issue, which a lot of people do. And obviously, I may have done something, and it could have been us, as you know, Scott, launching a podcast and doing 100 episodes and the stress of trying to run all that.
Yeah.
And so I just took the attitude of, I'm under a lot more stress than normal. My schedule has altered. I'm going to work out a lot less. I got to the point where there were weeks where I didn't work out at all, and then other weeks I go back to 2 workouts.
Well, it goes back to your point earlier. Whether we're talking about, I mean, there's so many influences in our lives that can trigger inflammation of the body. Inflammation of the body is a fire on the inside. It is. I love your connection on firefighting, since I used to be a wildland firefighter out west when I left the corporate world. So it's, I totally see the connection on that, and I love using that analogy, because people need to understand that there's a lot of different things that could trigger a fire, especially within the human body. And actually, a past co-host on my show, if you haven't interviewed her yet, you guys should check out Dr. Sylvia Tara, who's a PhD biochemist, Rios researcher from California. And she just came out with a new book, The Secret Life of Fat, and how fat is an organ, and how it literally is influenced by hormonal fluctuations. And this is everything we're talking about. It's like, guys, like, your hormones control a lot of stuff inside the body. And if there's a fire going on, they are going to be way out of whack.
Oh, absolutely. And I will definitely welcome an introduction, because that is exactly the type of guest that we want to have on Fitfluential Radio. And it's something where, if you look at the company, Fitfluential, we're looking to help the largest audience, because we firmly believe that there is a misperception, and I'm glad you brought this up today. Exercise my way to health and wellness, or I can eat my way by following a specific diet regimen to health. And we're clearly building that podcast and that discussion, and we're going to be doing some things on the website and in the business side to reframe the dialogue, which is, we don't need to go beyond circadian alignment and light dark cycles for most people if that's where it's broken, right? There's plenty of paleo books out there. There's plenty of keto discussions. There's huge groups on social media, but there's not a lot of people that have, unless you go look for it, a dialogue around, we need to stop if your foundation is broken, right? Your house is either crumbling already and you don't realize it, or it's going to crumble. And this is the part where we talked about people, you know, dropping dead of, you know, heart disease at young ages or other problems, or people get diseases, right? They get dementia. There's a problem with strokes. All these other things, incidentally, are coincident with low melatonin. Not in every case, but very, very commonly. And so what we have decided to do with our podcast is reframe the dialogue, right? We're not going to be having somebody on there saying, here's the latest and greatest workout. Work out this way. Work out more intensely. Because people, there's enough information and noise on that in the marketplace. Nor are we having people on saying, you know, it's all about eating. Eat this way. Eat cleaner. You need to be more strict. And we really, really firmly believe that by reframing the dialogue, we can help people become their own health advocates, right? This is something that Dr. Sachin Patel from Toronto and I talked about in his episode, which is if you can keep yourself out of the healthcare system by being your own advocate, we look at this the wrong way. We look at it at the analogy that for insurance, for example, in health, we treat it like it's different than auto insurance, right? You get auto insurance in your car. And you certainly don't set it up that you want to just run around recklessly and you hope that everything goes well, right?
It's there if you need it.
You get in an accident. You have a pretty large deductible, $500, $1,000, you know, for most people. And you certainly aren't looking at that. If you need your oil change, your insurance doesn't pay for it. If you need to do preventative maintenance, your insurance doesn't pay for it. Now, if we transfer this analogy to healthcare and how people do health and wellness, they don't do it the same way, right? They're looking at, oh, I got this great healthcare plan. It pays for all of my scripts. I have a low deductible. I can do this, this, and this. And they've missed the, I'm my own health advocate. My metric of success is I never have to go to the doctor other than from a optimization standpoint and a longevity standpoint.
You basically just took the words right out of my mouth when I talk to people about my healthcare and how often I go to the doctor, which is never. I never had to.
And I go at this point. I mean, Dr. Lane Sebring, who's sort of the paleo doc, right? He's the oldest practicing paleo MD, and he does a lot around paleo and keto. And he and I have a dialogue that if somebody were watching and listening in the office when I was in there, we're all talking about, okay, what's the next 12 months look like? What should I be focusing on to get to the next level? And it's all on optimization and in longevity, not, oh, I've got these signs and symptoms, and oh, you know what, your blood work still isn't very good in this area. And that's where, if we look at the bar, people should be heading. You have to start from where you're at. But I can clearly tell you if you're not sleeping right, if you're violating your circadian cycle, you're going to be in the doctor's office talking about fixing things instead of optimizing things.
Yeah, I love that connection because so many people feel that they need to depend on healthcare. And this is why I'm an advocate just like you about this whole point. It's like, guys, rebuild your foundation, as you hinted earlier, right, for the house. Like you want your house to stand strong. You want your body to stand strong. You want it to stand like a temple. You have to start from the foundation and rebuild. And a lot of us nowadays, and especially here in the U.S., a lot of people are rebuilding. They have to take the time and they're afraid or they think they can't and they're trying to take on too many things at one point in time. And it's like, guys, just get started. Start listening to podcasts like Fifth Influential Radio or obviously mine, Live the Fuel. But it's like, guys, start doing the research. Start surrounding yourself with knowledge because this is what you need to be doing. Using your healthcare because you have to be taking drugs. You do not have to be taking drugs. I'm sorry. My whole goal right now is getting my father off of his diabetic medication. I've gotten him off of at least half of his meds already, but it's going to take time because he's just the worst person to listen to me. So, because I'm the son.
Well, it's always difficult with those that are closest to us. And I firmly believe that, you know, when we talk about advocacy and being our own health advocate, that we, as anybody listening here, have to be our own best advocate. In other words, we got to start with ourselves and live it and be congruent with what we're talking about. And I somebody asked me the other day, they're like, how many people do you think you've influenced? And I said, I have a difficult time knowing what the number is. I mean, you certainly look at the very first year of PaleoFX, when I was involved with it, we had 500 people.
Yeah.
And then I think last year they had 1,500 or 2,000 people there. And then all those people went back in many cases and touched other people. And it all starts with this advocacy, right? You know, I was so passionate about it that I challenged Keith and Michelle that we need to do this. We need to change lives. The same way that when I approached Kelly at Fitfluential, I did the same thing. We need to be teach people to be their own health advocates. And one of the ways we're going to do this is with this podcast. And yeah, I don't know what the number is, but I can tell you in the last week, I got two emails on social media about the fact that I had either had coffee at some point with this one gal and she was so off track, and she's now at the point where she's actually fairly optimized and actually pursuing sort of a health and wellness profession, right, to help others. So you just don't know how many people get touched by this. But what I always tell people is, and this is to your point about family, sometimes people are not ready to accept the message. We should always be worried about, number one, us as health advocates for ourselves. And sometimes they have to watch you, right? If you've got a husband or a wife or a girlfriend or a boyfriend that's looking at you and they're like, no, I don't buy it. My experience is, observationally, if they see you get better, feeling better, not getting sick. I was having a conversation with a friend, right, last week. It's flu season, right? Everybody in her house, all her kids got sick.
Yeah.
And you know, the conversation was, you know, since I've gotten on track, I haven't been sick in 5 or 6 years. And you get this incredulous look of, come on, you're kidding. You're telling me you haven't really been sick in 5 or 6 years. And for people listening, that is the benefit when all this inflammation goes away and your body's immune system is rocking and rolling, is you're not going to get sick very often.
Nope.
And
I'm one of those people. I can honestly tell people, like, listen, maybe once a year I get like the sniffle, but I'm not going to the doctor. I don't get flu shots. I don't do any of that stuff.
No, and it is the benefit of it, but you know, people have to be ready for the message. I think generationally, the older generation, certainly I'm a lot older than you, but my parents, right, would have never subscribed to any of this, right?
No.
The guy or gal in the white coat that has MD behind their name is the only person I'm going to pay attention to. And, you know, it's hard, right? They're the people that are out there, instead of making bulletproof coffee with grass-fed butter, they're putting margarine on their toast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
which is just
– I don't
know. That's a whole different conversation. So
yeah, exactly.
So manufactured vegetable oils. Oh, it's crap. Yeah, and by the way, I had a bulletproof coffee this morning.
Me too.
Yeah, great minds think alike. So, I mean, to bring this show to a solid close, I mean, obviously, we're going to have very detailed show notes for our listeners. They're going to be able to follow you on Fitfluential. They're going to be able to follow you. I love that recommendation on the Paleo FX. I was poking around. I didn't even know about the site until you and I got introduced, but what is like a sum up takeaway here that you think people need to really take away from this? Even if they don't end up listening to your show, which I'm recommending to our listeners, you guys go and at least check out Fitfluential Radio. I'm a subscriber now. It's awesome. But when I bring our episodes to a close, I want to give you guys as my co-host that last and final word or words, to really help make an impact to our listeners.
Absolutely. Well, I guess here's what my biggest takeaways and lessons are, which is a couple of things we touched on today. One is the effect of our lifestyle and environment on the epigenetic side. These are sort of the switches, again, that you turn on or off, are much more important to not only health and wellness, but the aspect of the dark side, which is chronic diseases and potentially early death. So you should be focused in that area from a lifestyle standpoint at optimization. In other words, we're not going to be optimized if we're inadvertently destroying the foundation, right? You know, we talked earlier about mitochondria and the tie-in on epigenetics, and we're much more in charge of what happens in those switches. So don't fall prey to the argument of I'm going to out-eat, especially even if you're doing paleo or a nutrition plan that you think is super clean. In other words, you're building one of the walls on the house. Don't think you're going to out-exercise and be optimized long-term, again, if the foundation is destroyed. So focus on sleep. Focus on a circadian optimization plan, which is around sort of the light-dark cycle and eliminating the things that get you off track with that. And that is something that we spent a lot of time talking about on Fitfluential Radio. And what was interesting, and I'll leave with this final thought, we thought we were going to have to advocate the circadian and light dark and, you know, technology and blue light and all that. And after interviewing 100 plus guests, we were astonished at the number of people, including a lot of the paleo people, who brought it up in their interviews without us even asking.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. I think that's an eye-opener right there and an ear-opener. Well, there you go, guys. I mean, this has been a powerful episode. I'm looking forward to continuing to connect more with Kevin Cottrell and the FitFluential team. I already said it before. These final words are powerful. This episode has been amazing. This is just another great way to really fire up 2017. So again, guys, check out FitFluential.com. Check out PaleoFX.com. Make sure you follow them on social media. We're going to have everything linked, as always, to all of our co-hosts. All their social media feeds will be in the show notes. But again, guys, this is what it's all about. We're here to fuel your health, your business, your lifestyle. Keep living a fired up epic life, guys. I'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thank you for listening to Live the Fuel. Visit us at livethefuel.com. Stay connected on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more at Live the Fuel. Live the fired up epic life. Hashtag Live the Fuel.